You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
2026, it's a new year, and for many that could mean a change of job as well. And for RNIB, we now have a new chief executive. We have Simon Antrobus with us to chat a little bit about, well, why he's here and his hopes for RNIB as well. Simon, welcome to RNIB and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Alan. It's great to be here.
You are literally just here, you know, at the beginning of January. So a bit of a baptism of fire coming into an organisation like RNIB. So much to learn.
It's been fantastic, actually, Alan. You're right, there's a lot to learn, and I'm curious by nature, so I'm keen to learn as much as I possibly can. And I think that's an important part of when you join a new organisation, especially as chief executive. It's important that you get as quickly as you can underneath the skin of the organisation, get to understand how it ticks, what the focus is, but more importantly for me, to understand the purpose of the organisation and to understand what we're really trying to achieve for blind and partially sighted people. And that's been a fantastic journey. I've learned so much about what the organisation does, but I equally know I've only really just scratched the surface.
Where do you start? There is so much to an organisation like RNIB, from the frontline services through fundraising to finances to estates, that there's a massive amount to go in. Where do you start with something like that?
Well, partly in the hands of the organisation, which is one element of it, but equally, I've joined organisations as a CEO before, so you get a sense of the things that you might want to understand a bit more deeply early on in your tenure. So part of it is about what people put in your diary, the meetings that you might want to go to. And then the other part is about what I think are important things to understand as you join. So I think for me, it's critical that I get a real sense of how the organisation works from the perspective of as many staff as possible. So colleague engagement for me as a chief executive is really important. Now, I know I can't speak to 1,000 colleagues, but if I can speak to as many colleagues across the RNIB as possible, you get a real sense of the key themes and issues that as a chief executive you might want to consider and think about in terms of your future plans. And then it is the basics, really. What is colleague engagement like? What stats and data are there available to understand that? What's the budget looking like? What's our plans and in terms of finances? How does the executive leadership team tick? Can I get early meetings in the diary to meet with as many of the senior leaders in the organisation as possible? And equally, you know, some expectations from trustees. So having conversations as early as possible with trustees collectively or individually is important. And then it's a case of making sure you build in time over your week as a chief executive to reflect on what you think you've learned. And that's really important to me, spending time just thinking, sitting down and saying, okay, well, what do I think I've been told this week? What have people been sharing with me? What does that tell me I might need to know more about? And where do I think I might need to go next with some of the things I've been told?
Starting with, as you say, the exec team, the senior leadership team, hugely important to get that big picture view. But also, that's what it's important as well to find out what's going on, sort of boots on the ground, and perhaps even with beneficiaries, customers as well.
Absolutely. So I've already made it very clear, I hope, to the wider organisation that the experiences, the lived experience of people who are blind or partially sighted is absolutely critical to the organisation. But it's fundamental to my own kind of personal values, Alan. So I don't feel an organisation can really set itself up to succeed if it doesn't properly co-produce the work it does with those people it's set up to serve and support. And that's absolutely critical for me. And it's been immensely helpful in my first 2 weeks here and will continue to be in my tenure here as chief executive.
Do you think it's important that perhaps the beneficiaries, customers, if you like, have a bigger say or a say in how the charity operates, you know, sort of telling the organisation what works for them, what they feel their priorities are, and perhaps them helping shape the direction going forward?
I think it's fundamental, to be honest, Alan. You can't drive an organization like this towards success if you don't engage with your customers and beneficiaries? Because whilst we're going to have to make some decisions about what we do in the future, if we want to make informed decisions, then we need to engage with as many people as possible in that process. So it'll be about what does the insight and data tell us? What do colleagues across the organization tell us in terms of their thinking and thoughts? But fundamentally, what does lived experience, what do blind and partially sighted people think about what we should be doing in the future? It all goes into the melting pot of decision making and can only help and benefit us when we come to make decisions about, our future strategy and plans and the impact we want to make in the sight loss community.
You talked about having a background in the charity sector. Where have you been previously to RIB, and what brought you into the charity sector and perhaps kept you there as well?
Well, I love working in the charity sector. I spent pretty much all of my career working for charitable organisations. It sort of resonates with my own kind of personal values about making a difference. That's been absolutely critical to me. And a long time ago, when I was a young person, a very long time ago, I was helped by a youth worker, and that youth worker opened my eyes to a world I didn't really knew existed. And I've not looked back from then. I've gone on this massive journey. I can trace back where I am today here as chief executive of RNIB from the support I got from a youth worker. And I think that kind of gave me the foundation that there's real value in the charity world and what we can achieve. And it's almost like a home to me. This is the place where I get my joy and my sense of purpose and sense of self-worth. Those things are really important to me. And then alongside that, I've got a real sense of creativity and I like to explore new things. So in my experience across the charitable sector, there's been a whole range of things. I've worked at Scope, I've worked at Parkinson's UK, I've worked in the addiction and substance misuse sector. I've worked for a youth work organization, a children's organization in terms of children in need and the kind of all the kind of creative stuff that goes with that. And it just felt like a natural thing to move into RNIB. I mean, what a great organization, got amazing heritage, highly respected, a huge spectrum of opportunity and great work to take the organization forward. And it felt like new and fresh and different for me. And that's really exciting as a CEO, being able to come into an organization and feel like you can really kind of make your mark. So, it's a lot of things. A big sense of social justice, which you feel very strongly when you work for a charity, and a real sense of purpose. And those things have always been important to me in all of my roles in the voluntary sector.
You kind of answered my next question, Simon. It came from Children in Need, a very famous charity, to an organisation like RNIB. Again, it's a well-known name. What kind of attracts someone with your track record to make that leap? Because I imagine it is a bit of a leap of faith sometimes as well, going into, although it's still a charity, it's still, a different sector, if you like.
That's part of it, to be honest, Alan. That one of the things you've always got to be careful as a chief executive is that you don't outstay your welcome. You can come in and make a contribution to an organization and it can energize you, but there is sometimes a point when it's right to hand the baton on to someone else. And I was beginning to feel like that at Children in Need. I love my work there. It's a fantastic organization, many and varied different activities to get involved in. But this opportunity came up and it just felt like a natural progression to go and do something very exciting and very different in another well-known organization. And, what's not to love about that opportunity? It's incredibly exciting, and I've met some amazing and incredible people along the way, and awe-inspiring work that we're doing in the sight loss sector. It's just such a vital and important organisation, and that's what's attracted me.
It's a big thing around societal change, I suppose, for RNIB as well over the years, looking at society making the change to help people who are blind or partially sighted, that kind of not the medical model of disability, if you like, as well, but looking at society to make those changes as well, because that's where the barriers come from. So that there's lots of fronts that RNIB kind of works on. That must be a challenge as well, and perhaps something to get your teeth into too.
Yeah, and look, that's so important, isn't it? I mean, there's so much we can do with advocacy, help, and support, and I've seen a lot of that in the organisation. I'm very proud of what we do, but equally, you're right, we can really change things when we campaign and when we try to influence society. And for me, those things are equally important and vital in any charity. You need to think about how you deliver help and support, but you also need to understand what's needed and try and advocate for change, the key factors of any charitable organization. So delivering both is key. What is the challenge in all of that, and the opportunity in a way, Alan, is how you set yourself up so that you can do those things when there are, of course, limitations. And we're very lucky to be able to generate quite a lot of income for this organization in a very, very competitive environment. But the next step of the journey is to ask yourself, well, how do you deploy your income generation so that you can make sure you're delivering on your commitments to provide help and support and advocacy alongside campaigning for change? And there are always going to be dilemmas in that, but they're the vital things that an organisation like RNIB should be focusing on.
In the 21st century, a lot of charities are obviously making lots of corporate connections now, whether that's in terms of fundraising, whether it's influencing as well. There have been sort of thoughts that perhaps some organisations are being too corporate and perhaps losing why they're there, who they're there for, kind of thing. Is that a fine balancing act?
Yeah, my kind of take on that, Alan, is that if you lose your sense of purpose and you just try to operate as some kind of corporate entity, you are ultimately not going to succeed. For me, the driving factor of an organization should be its sense of purpose. What are we trying to achieve for blind and partially sighted people? And how do we fully engage the community in making decisions about how we focus on those things? So getting our purpose right is absolutely critical. But then you've got to think about, once we're clear about our purpose, how do we make sure the organisation is set up to properly deliver on that purpose, but live within its means? Know that we've got constraints. And then the critical part of all of that is how you tell that story to engage others. So whether that might be a corporate partnership or a partnership with a high-value donor or another organisation, whatever it might be, or the government for that matter, you've got to be able to articulate what it is you're trying to achieve. But the fundamental thing about any organisation, we're talking about an organisation that turns over around 90 million with over 1,000 staff. You've got to be set up properly. Our colleagues across the organisation would expect that. We need to make sure we're properly thinking about governance, safeguarding, colleague engagement, planning, decision making, managing our budgets. All of those things come with alongside being able to deliver a really strong sense of purpose across the organisation.
I'm trying to make this not sound like a job interview. And when you mention some of the charities like Scope and Parkinson's, there's a real pan-disability theme running through those. I don't know if you have any experience of sight loss in your life, your friends, family, anything like that. What's your understanding of the lives of people who are blind or partially sighted? Is that something that will grow?
To be honest, Alan, I'm in learning mode there. I've got some experience of sight loss in my family. And one of the things that I've learned personally, but I want to kind of understand more, and that's why I say very clearly that lived experience is so important when you're CEO of any organization. What's so important here is understanding everything comes from the principle of an asset. So when you mentioned the social model of disability, I think that's a critical factor. And coming from organisations like Scope and Parkinson's and some of the work we did at Children in Need, I really understand the importance of that the social model of disability is the kind of element that we all need to think about when it comes to sight loss, because it's the barriers to living a full life and thriving if you're blind and partially sighted are as much about the way society responds to you or not as they are about your blindness or being visually impaired. So that bit, I accept and understand that I've got quite a bit of work to do to fully get myself up to speed. And I've committed to be really curious in that space. As I said before, on a number of occasions, that lived experience is so critical. And understanding that is really important if you want to be a CEO that can take the organization forward.
Let's get away from the work part of things then, because obviously work-life balance is hugely important for people as well, as I'm sure it is for you. How do you switch off? How do you relax when you're not working?
The two things that are really, other than my family, of course, which is really important to me, and spending time with my family, I get real joy from that, and walking the dog. The two things that help me switch off or switch somewhere else, let's put it that way, is music and football. I live in Cambridgeshire, big Peterborough United football fan, season ticket holder. I don't know whether you switch off when you're a football fan, but it's a different kind of engagement. And then I've just got a real love for music, which goes back to my youth. If I ever feel like I need a moment to completely distract me, then I'll earn some very loud rock music played through some big speakers at home is a really good way of doing that.
That's something you would instill in staff as well, especially in very pressurized jobs, is to have that balance, to have that ability to let off the steam and to switch off as well. Is that something that has to be embedded in a staff kind of society as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that principle. Colleague well-being is absolutely critical, and I think as an organisation, we need to be mindful of that, and we need to be taking steps to demonstrate that that means something to us as a CEO and a leadership team, and that we can really articulate our intentions in that space, what we're doing to make sure that we're thinking all the time about colleague well-being. Me personally, let's do it from my point of view. I want people to come to work and feel that they can be their authentic selves, that they can do their best work and feel supported. And when there's a critical moment in their colleague journey, that we're here to help and support them and be understanding. That doesn't mean there's not going to be challenge in the work that we do, because we're in a space where it's important that we make a difference. And when we show up at work, we all genuinely want to do a good job. But in that space, for me, it's always been the case in any organization I've ran, colleague well-being is a conversation that we have at the highest level, just to make sure we're doing the right stuff, to make sure people are genuinely feeling like they can do their best job and that they're properly supported.
You've crossed the starting line now. You're off and running. You're learning a lot about the organisation, and so I'm sure it'll take a little while to settle in and look at what we're doing, some of the changes, some of the pathways, and so on as well. But we certainly hope you'll join us here on the radio, as chief execs in the past have done. Keep our listeners up to date as well on what's going on, and whatever your favourite new album is, all that kind of stuff as well. Hugely important. But thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's a pleasure, Alan. Thanks for the time. I'm very happy to come and talk again regularly.
For more interviews, features, and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.